Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center at El Cajon. Today we have analysis of the President's State of the Union speech, along with details on the official Republican response and reactions from local congressional members. We also have information on just what the President's State of the Union speech could mean for the San Diego region. On our Capitol Report, hear about a new bill to sharply restrict abortions across America. And in local news, we'll tell you about a court ruling in a case over the Alpine High School. Plus, hear about an Army helicopter crash in Ramona. We'll have a drought report from the National Weather Service with an outlook for the next 3 months. We'll also tell you about law enforcement stings in La Mesa that are ensnaring people caught buying alcohol for minors. And then on Destination East County, hear about some big events coming up in the next couple of weeks right here in East County, from a Cupids and Canines pet adoption event at Grossmont Center to Circus Vargas pitching a big tent show in El Cajon. Our newsmaker interview today is Erica Johnson with Sullivan Solar, who will be talking about some big changes in the solar market, including incentives that will be disappearing soon for rooftop solar and details on how to make sure you're grandfathered in if you're looking to go solar. On Bookshelf, hear Raina Menashe's fascinating interview with former ICE agent Timothy Daniels, who will be talking about his novel that's based on his real-life experiences. Learn about sales of two school properties by San Diego Unified School District, including one involved in an infamous school shooting. Plus, hear about a court ruling to protect the Delta smelt and how that impacts California's water supply. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
President Barack Obama delivered his State of the Union address this Tuesday, placing the eyes of the American people firmly on Washington. In his speech, the president focused on middle-class economics. His main goals are childcare, labor, education, and healthcare. President Obama called on Congress and the American people to advance these goals. One of the first goals the president announced was affordable or even universal child care. He cites the universal child care our country had during World War II. This program allowed millions of women to enter the workforce effectively. The workforce in our country is now nearly evenly populated by men and women. Keeping with this theme, the president announced his plan to provide paid sick and maternity leave for workers across the country. He also announced a plan to eliminate the wage gap between men and women. This comes along with a call to increase the minimum wage, which he says is worth 20% less than it was under Reagan. The president went on to speak about education. He referenced his plan to make the first 2 years of community college free and to help lower student loans for people across the nation. He also calls on businesses to offer more job training and paid apprenticeships. This is especially important to his plan to help veterans and says to businesses, if you want somebody who's going to get the job done, hire a veteran. He goes on to suggest a bipartisan effort to improve the infrastructure in the whole country. So let's set our sights higher than a single oil pipeline, he says, and cites ports, trains, bridges, and the internet as areas to improve. Elaborating, the president also declares his support for a free and open internet. These plans go along with his commitment to building stronger trade partnerships and rewarding companies for investing here. The final plan President Obama has for labor is to fix the tax code. He says he wants to cut out loopholes for the rich and give breaks to the middle class. This plan, he says, will increase tax revenue, which he plans to use for healthcare and the space program. Foreign policy is next on the agenda. The president warns about responding rashly to conflict. He references the destructive and costly wars we have been engaged in since 9/11 and calls on the country to put more emphasis on diplomacy and cooperation. One of the targets of this diplomacy is Cuba, with whom our policy against, he describes as, long past its expiration date. Harkening back to the Cold War, he goes on to criticize Russia over their aggression in Ukraine and describes their economy as in tatters. The focus was also on the Middle East during the speech. The president speaks of his commitment to hunting down terrorist groups, such as ISIS, and cooperating with nations all over the world to improve the situation. This includes diplomacy with Iran. The worldwide effort to stop Iran from developing a nuclear program is going well, he says. He also proclaims he will veto any more embargoes or aggressive action towards Iran that may inhibit diplomacy. According to the White House, the biggest threat to our country, however, is climate change. The president explains that last year was the hottest on record. 14 of the 15 other hottest years are all within this century. This is an urgent and dangerous threat to national security, he says. Obama calls on America to take better care of the environment. He also references the plan to cut our country's emissions by half, and for the first time ever, China has also agreed to cut theirs. President Obama closes his speech by talking about his commitment to change in the world and our country, prohibiting torture, constraining drones, standing up for women and minorities, including LGBT, are all cited as his accomplishments. He pushes for more transparency, easier voting, reform justice, and the closing of Guantanamo Bay. The president says that though Republicans and Democrats do not agree on everything, they can at least agree that they are committed to making the country better. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Hayden Parsley.
The official Republican Party response to President Barack Obama's State of the Union speech was delivered by Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa, a mother and lieutenant colonel in the Army National Guard. Ernst stated that rather than respond to a speech, I'd like to talk about your priorities. She said the newly elected Republican majority in Congress, quote, understands how difficult these past years have been, unquote, citing economic concerns and what she called frustration with Washington's dysfunction. She then laid out priorities of the Republican Party, casting clear differences for voters between the president's goals and those of the GOP Congress. The president called for higher taxes on the wealthiest Americans to assure funding for programs to help middle-class Americans and protect programs such as Social Security, following years of tax slashing by Congress under prior administrations that helped create a massive deficit, which his administration has cut by two-thirds. The president proposed programs to help the middle class, such as universal child care and free community college. Ernst said Republicans aim to lower rates of taxes further still and create jobs, not pay for more government spending. As an example of job creation, she pushed for the Keystone Pipeline to be approved by the Senate and the President after the House passed a measure approving the project. Although a top NASA scientist has said the Keystone Pipeline would be devastating for its impact on climate change by fostering release of greenhouse gases from tar sands mining in Canada, to the point that he called it game over for the planet, Ernst insisted that the pipeline would have minimal environmental impact. She also called for more help for large companies by tearing down trade barriers in Europe and the Pacific. She said, "Let's sell more of what we can make and grow in America over there." And she also called for an increase in manufacturing to create jobs here. Obama has proposed raising the minimum wage and providing sick pay for workers, policies that Ernst did not comment on, but that the Republican Party leadership has opposed. She called on both parties to work together to discuss ways to support the military and confront terrorist threats posed by ISIL, Al-Qaeda, and radicalized individuals. The Affordable Health Care Act has provided health care benefits to 40 million Americans who lacked health care before, but Ernst noted that for some Americans who had health care before, plans have been canceled or premiums raised. She vowed that Republicans, rather than work to improve those flaws in the measure, will keep fighting to repeal the law without providing details about any replacement strategy. Whether the GOP plan would mean eliminating newfound health care for millions of Americans or going back to days when insurers could cancel or deny coverage for even minor pre-existing conditions were not issues that Ernst addressed. But she did make clear that the Republican plan to balance the budget will focus on cutting what she called wasteful spending and meaningful reforms, not higher taxes. Ernst grew up as a Midwest farm girl and has boasted on the campaign trail of castrating hogs, among other hard work that's prepared her for politics, and cutting pork, she says. In concluding her response to the State of the Union address, she maintained that instead of programs proposed by the president, Americans just need the freedom to dream big and a whole lot of work to succeed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
President Obama's State of the Union address on Tuesday had good news for a number of constituencies in San Diego, from veterans to scientists to immigrants. The speech drew praise from Democrats in the San Diego congressional delegation, but criticism from the Republicans. Representative Daryl Issa, a Republican, labeled it old ideas, while Representative Scott Peters, a San Diego Democrat, said he was encouraged by the president's commitment to scientific research, tax changes, and wider educational opportunities. Peters says, "I was encouraged to hear President Obama engaging in issues of importance to San Diego and the country and calling for bipartisanship on economic growth," said Peters. Times of San Diego offers this synopsis of Obama's comments on issues of specific importance to San Diego. Active duty military, with sailors and Marines from San Diego fighting Islamic terrorists in Iraq and Syria, the president asked Congress to pass a resolution to explicitly authorize the use of force against ISIS. And about veterans, Obama vowed to help returning veterans find jobs, saying, "To every CEO in America, let me repeat, if you want somebody who is going to get the job done, hire a veteran." Alan Gross recently freed from Cuba, and Captain Scott Kelly, who will soon begin a one-year mission in space. Climate change. The president said he reiterated concerns about a warming climate, which has been extensively studied by researchers at UC San Diego and the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. The best scientists in the world are all telling us that our activities are changing the climate, he said, and if we do not act forcefully, we'll continue to see rising oceans, longer, hotter heat waves, dangerous droughts and floods, and massive disruptions that can trigger greater migration, conflict, and hunger around the globe. When talking about space, the president singled out NASA astronaut Captain Scott Kelly, who is about to spend a year on the International Space Station, while his twin, Mark, also an astronaut, remains on Earth. The twin astronauts will be a focus of a UC San Diego study. Medical research. Obama mentioned successful treatment of cystic fibrosis pioneered by Vertex Pharmaceuticals, which has operations in San Diego, and pledged to support medical research. "Tonight, I'm launching a new precision initiative to bring us closer to curing diseases like cancer and diabetes, and to give all of us access to the personalized information we need to keep ourselves and our families healthier," he said. And he had a lot to say about community colleges. He urged Congress to make community college free to ensure that all Americans have the education necessary for a modern economy. By the end of this decade, 2 in 3 job openings will require some higher education, he said, and yet we still live in a country where too many bright, striving Americans are priced out of the education they need. San Diego has the second largest community college district in California, and Peters noticed the president's focus on expanding access to college was also very welcome, not just to families struggling to save enough to send their kids to college, but also to thousands of San Diego companies who are reliant on educated workforce. About immigration, Obama acknowledged political differences over immigration, but appealed to Congress to create a path to citizenship for the 11 million undocumented immigrants in America. "Yes, passions will fly on immigration," Obama said, "but surely we can all see something of ourselves in the striving young student and agree that no one benefits when hardworking mom is taken from her children, and that it's possible to shape a law that upholds our tradition as a nation of laws and a nation of immigrants." Here are some more comments from San Diego's congressional delegation. Daryl Issa, who represents coastal North San Diego and South Orange counties, said he was disappointed by the speech, which he described as old ideas and half-baked policies in a statement. Issa said, "Every year the president demands more money from Congress. This time it's $400 billion in new taxes. The first time it was $1 trillion in stimulus spending." Congressman Duncan Hunter, a Republican from East County, accused the president of talking smack. In an interview aired on KUSI, Hunter faulted the president's foreign policy, adding that he believes the U.S. needs to be killing more bad people overseas. Democratic Representative Susan Davis, whose district includes parts of East County and San Diego, praised the speech, however, and urged the Republican-controlled Congress to join the president in his efforts to support the middle class. She said, "Despite recent signs of economic improvement, too many families are not feeling the benefits. The president brought forward specific proposals to strengthen the economic security of working families. Congress should join him in that effort." This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. A bill pushed forward by the Republican majority in the House of Representatives seeks to ban abortions after 20 weeks, 5 months, except in cases of rape, incest, or a serious danger to the mother. The bill by Representative Trent Franks of Arizona is based on arguments that contend that a fetus can feel pain at this point. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has stated, regardless of where you stand on the broader issue, we should all agree that unborn children should be protected at least from the point where they're capable of feeling pain. However, this claim is challenged by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which says there is no scientific evidence to support the belief that a 20-week-old fetus can feel pain. According to WebMD, a 20-week fetus is about 6 inches long and weighs about 10 ounces. At this stage, it can yawn, suck a thumb, and stretch. Quickening, the first movements of the fetus are typically felt by the mother at or shortly after the 20-week mark. But some serious fetal abnormalities cannot be picked up by testing until the second trimester, at or close to the 20-week mark, when there is adequate development to make diagnosis possible. An ultrasound at 18 to 22 weeks can reveal abnormalities in the brain, spine, heart, or other organs, for example. With a growing number of states imposing waiting periods to get an abortion, and abortion providers not available in some cities and towns now, women who learn that their unborn child has a serious abnormality may find it difficult to obtain a legal abortion before the 20-week mark. The vote in Congress will be held on January 22nd, the 42nd anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court case that established abortion rights for women up until a fetus is viable outside the womb at 22 to 24 weeks, with restrictions applying for later terminations. The bill is expected to pass the House. There are serious doubts about it passing the Senate, however, even with a new Republican majority. When the issue came up in the last Congress, Republican Senators Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Dean Heller of Nevada, and Mark Kirk from Illinois all voted against it. Some Republicans in the House have doubts about the bill as well. Republican Renny Almers says she believes the issue may lose the party votes among younger millennial voters and urges the issue to be brought up at a later date, the Huffington Post reports. Elmers, along with 5 other Republican congresswomen, also take issue with the rape exception. They maintain that it is too narrow on grounds that many incidences of sexual assault go unreported and the bill only protects those who filed a police report. Many pro-choice advocates have voiced alarm over the bill. According to Women's Health Policy Report, this is equivalent to overturning Roe v. Wade completely, period, says Terry O'Neill, president of the National Organization for Women. Democratic Representative Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut states the role of Congress should not be to deny women a medical procedure that they have decided with their physician is the right course of action. But Republican Franks says he has great confidence in the bill passing. He counters the notion that this will lose conservative votes for millennials, as he believes that most young people oppose abortion, the National Journal reports. He also says the bill is truly about morals. He concludes, if sincere people will simply read this bill, they will see for themselves that it represents a genuine and sincere effort to protect babies and their mothers, beginning at the 6th month of gestation, from one of the most tragic realities in our country. The National Organization for Women, however, has urged the president to veto the bill if it passes. Now's message to the president states, banning abortion doesn't stop women from seeking the procedure, but it does make it less safe.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Superior Court Judge Joel Pressman has submitted a preliminary ruling ordering the Grossmont Union High School District to set aside bond funds for construction of a new high school in Alpine. The judge sent his ruling to attorneys for the district and to Alpine taxpayers for bond accountability, which sought the injunction to protect taxpayer money approved for the high school. The decision gives neither side all that it sought. The court denied a request by Alpine to stop further spending of bond funds and state matching funds on other new projects, but grants other preliminary relief by ordering Grossmont to allocate a certain portion of bond and state matching funds received toward construction of the high school. The judge writes, "The court does believe that evidence supports an injunction to set aside some funding for the eventual construction of the high school. Alpine parents have sought a high school for 20 years, noting the dangers of teens commuting long distances to El Cajon to attend school, particularly in winter weather. Several teens have lost their lives driving to and from school or after-school sports activities. Voters in the Grossmont District approved Proposition H in 2004 and Prop U in 2008, 2 bond measures that total nearly $700 million. The bond funds were intended for building a new high school in Alpine and other projects. But the Grossmont Board majority has refused to build the school, claiming enrollment triggers were not met, a point disputed by supporters of the school. The district defied a grand jury order and prompted parents to seek to split from the Grossmont district and unify the Alpine Union district to enable it to become K-12 and build the long-awaited school. The County Board of Education has approved the unification effort and recommended that the state also grant approval. Pressman made clear that whether or not unification is successful, funds from this bond are supposed to be used in part to build a high school. But the judge left blanks for the amounts to be set aside, which are still to be determined. The sum will be split into two parts, one to be set aside immediately and the other by January 2016. Details should be announced this week during the formal injunction hearing at the San Diego Hall of Justice. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
A Black Hawk helicopter crash-landed at the Ramona Airport on Tuesday, causing minor injuries to two Army National Guard aviators. The guardsmen were forced to make an emergency landing during a routine training mission. Both the pilot and co-pilot were able to escape from the crashed helicopter on their own and were transported to a local hospital. The rotor sheared off in the crash, 10 News reports. Cause of the crash remains under investigation. This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The La Mesa Police Department has been conducting an undercover shoulder tap operation along with agents from the State Alcohol Beverage Control, or ABC, targeting underage drinking and people who supply alcohol to minors. Officers made 36 visits to local businesses and solicited 86 people to buy alcohol for a minor. More than 30% agreed to do so and were arrested. The effort is the result of a grant from the ABC awarded to 47 law enforcement agencies. La Mesa received over $21,000, and the La Mesa Police Department says these operations will continue through July. Police say this is important to increase protection for youth in La Mesa and keep the community safe. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County has events ranging from a Sock Monkeys concert at a wine tasting room in La Mesa to an art show and family nature walk at Mission Trails Regional Park. Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions including Cupids and Canines, pet adoption event at Grossmont Center, to Circus Vargas bringing in its show to El Cajon. Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
Mission Trails Regional Park is displaying works of 7 award-winning artists in one show. The works created in a variety of mediums are on display now through January 30th in the Visitor Center Art Gallery. For details, visit missiontrailsregionalpark.org.
On Friday night, January 24th, from 7 to 10 p.m., the Sock Monkeys will perform at the San Pasqual Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa's downtown village at 8364 La Mesa Boulevard. The group plays music from past to present, also mixing in their original music during a spirited evening. Wine is available by the glass. Desserts, cheese, and crackers are also available. For more information, visit sanpasqualwinery.com.
Felix Cavalier's Rascals are coming to the Poway Center for the Performing Arts Foundation on Saturday, January 24th at 8 p.m. Felix Cavalier is best known as the keyboardist and lead singer of the 1960s Young Rascals, king of blue-eyed soul and later pop and jazz fusion. The group later became the Rascals. Hits include Groovin', Good Lovin', A Beautiful Morning, and more. The tickets and details, you can visit the Poway Center for Performing Arts.org.
Mission Trails Regional Park Trail Guides will lead a guided nature walk for the whole family on Sunday, January 25th, from 3 to 4 p.m. Meet at the Visitor Center for a free walk, which provides a good opportunity for some family time together enjoying nature. Along the trail, discover the many seasonal changes that occur in the park throughout the year.
A 90-year-old pipe organ has been restored at La Mesa Central Congregational Church at 8360 Lemon Avenue in La Mesa, which will host a concert to celebrate completion of the restoration on Sunday, January 25th at 3 p.m. The concert will feature classical and sacred works by Bach, Mendelssohn, Franck, and Widor, performed by Robert Plimpton, resident organist at First United Methodist Church in San Diego. Plimpton has also performed weekly concerts at Spreckles Pipe Organ in Balboa Park and has played with local orchestras as well as teaching at San Diego State University.
Circus Vargas will bring its newest performance, Arlequin, to the parking lot at Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall in El Cajon from February 5th through the 9th. The circus features an array of dazzling performers, including aerialists, acrobats, clowns, and more. For details and tickets, visit circusvargas.com.
Grossmont Center invites you to surround yourself with puppy love. The shopping mall in La Mesa will hold a Cupids and Canines pet adoption event on February 7th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Over 100 dogs and puppies from 17 local rescue groups will be at Grossmont Center looking for a loving home. You will be able to meet, play, and learn more about each canine. Plus, you will find your perfect match. You can adopt and take home a furry new member of the family just in time for Valentine's Day.
La Mesa Police Chief Ed Aceves will speak at a La Mesa Chamber of Commerce breakfast on Tuesday, February 10th at 7:30 a.m. at the Marie Callender's Restaurant in La Mesa. Chief Aceves will share his thoughts and vision for La Mesa as he hands over the reins of the police department to the next chief. Florio, a dance theater musical production, will be presented on February 8th at 2 p.m. in the Muette Dance Studio, which is located in Lemon Grove. The show features the indigenous dancing and costumes of Mexico. If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today we're going to be talking about a hot topic, and that is solar energy. My special guest today is Erica Johnson, who is the Director of Community Relations at Sullivan Solar Power. Sullivan is the largest installer of solar locally per the California Solar Initiative. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Miriam.
Now, you're here to talk today about some monumental changes that are taking places in the solar market. You're telling us that the year 2015 is going to be the largest surge in demand the region has ever seen in what's being referred to as the solar gold rush of 2015. Can you tell us why?
Yeah, actually, there's a couple big policy changes that are going to be taking place both on the statewide level, especially here locally in the SDG&E territory, and then also on the national level.
And what are those changes?
The first is the rules of solar as we currently know them are changing in the state of California. So currently, any property owner that installs a solar power system enters into a billing arrangement with a utility that's called net energy metering. And what net energy metering is it's an annualized billing arrangement. So when someone installs a solar power system, they no longer pay for their power on a monthly basis, rather they pay annually. And over that year period, for any energy that is put onto the grid, the solar producer receives full retail credit for that power.
So that's a sweet deal for the homeowner or the business owner that's putting solar on to take advantage of that net metering credit. But I understand that's going away. Can you tell us when?
Yeah, well, sort of. The net metering cap, there's a cap on the amount of net energy metered systems that we can have in each utility territory. That's 5% of the aggregate peak demand on the local utility grid. Mm-hmm. And SDG&E is the first utility in the state of California that's going to be hitting its cap. We anticipate that the cap will hit sometime between September and December of 2015. However, because there's going to be an unprecedented surge in demand for solar, it is likely that it will happen even before then.
Yeah, so to be safe, people should get in, this spring, this summer, to make sure that they lock that in?
Yeah, we're telling our customers that are interested in installing a solar power system that they definitely want to sign up before May of 2015, just because the typical installation backlog under normal market conditions is 120 days.
It's liable to be longer with everybody rushing to get these credits.
Exactly.
Now, If you do get in under that window, then you're grandfathered in with the net metering, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So anyone that's already installed a solar power system is protected, and anybody that installs before the net metering cap is hit is also protected. They're going to receive 20 years of grandfathering provisions.
Wow, so that's a really big deal. Once net metering goes away or these caps are reached, is there any other kind of incentive on the horizon that the California Public Utilities Commission or the legislature is looking at?
Currently, there is not any additional solar incentives that are being considered at the California Public Utilities Commission.
Okay, so that's a big deal. Now, there's a second incentive that's also going away. Tell us about that at the federal level.
Yeah, so at the federal level, the federal tax credit pays for 30% of a solar project cost, which is the largest incentive that's available for any solar producer in the United States. The federal tax credit on the residential level is going to be eliminated completely in 2016. So the solar power system has to be installed and fully energized by the end of 2016 in order to capture that tax credit. And then for commercial property owners, the 30% tax credit is going to be reduced to 10% in 2016. So the incentive is going down.
Interesting. So obviously there's a big incentive for homeowners to get in as early as possible on that as well, and business owners too. The obvious question here is both the president and the governor, you know, the legislature in California have been saying that they want to see more alternative energy, more use of solar, more rooftops. We had the million solar roofs in Senate not very long ago. So the big question is, why are they taking away these incentives? Are we looking at the power of the lobbying by the big utility industries, a monopoly here?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's a part of it. So this most recent legislation that was signed into effect surrounding net energy metering, AB 327, was pushed forward through the utility companies. So they definitely are applying as much pressure as possible. You know,
yeah.
The utilities in California have a 100-year-old monopoly business model where they've controlled the power supply. And so solar does sort of provide a threat that they're not used to. And
yeah, they're pushing for the big industrialized projects, the industrialization of the desert and the rural areas here with these massive scale wind farms and desert solar projects, as opposed to utility companies really don't like the rooftop solar because it takes away from their profit model, I would assume.
Yeah, the 33% renewable portfolio standard does qualify for utility-owned power. So 33% of their power does need to come from renewable sources, and they prefer to put it into the high desert so that they can sink assets into the ground and build transmission lines into.
Yeah, which are very profitable. They make something of 11 cents a mile, or a lot of money on those transmission lines that they can actually bill back to the rate payers under California law. Now, if people don't like these changes, what can they do?
Well, on the federal level, there's a great opportunity to reach out to your local congressmen and representatives to let them know that you support solar and renewable energy and you want to see the continuous growth. The reality of the situation is the solar industry has been the fastest growing industry in the United States over the past 2 years. So there's so many benefits, whether it be job creation, declaring energy independence as a nation, and then also supporting a sustainable future for the next generation. So there's a lot of benefits in reaching out to your local representatives on the federal level to request the extension of the tax credit is definitely something that we as a company are trying to do, and we hope that solar supporters throughout the community will do as well.
Yeah. And listeners, if you've just tuned in, we are talking with Erica Johnson, who's the Director of Community Relations at Sullivan Solar Power here in San Diego. We've been talking about two big incentives for solar energy that are going to be going away. The federal tax credit is going to be ending in 2016, and the net metering, which is very favorable for ratepayers, there's a cap on that that's ending in the SDG&E territory perhaps as early as this year, and the recommendation is that if people want solar and they want to be assured that they can get grandfathered in for 20 years with the net metering, that they should do so before this summer. On a more positive note there, for those people that haven't looked at the pricing of solar in a long time, what's happened with it? I know it's dropped. How much has the price of solar itself dropped for residential and commercial?
Yeah, so over the past 6 years, pricing has dropped about almost 50%. The price of silicon has come down significantly. Mm-hmm. And then the increase in demand. In California, the California Solar Initiative program was very successful in that it increased the demand, and more property owners are going solar, especially in San Diego County. You drive down any street, you see a solar rooftop. So that's driven down prices as well. So the price of solar has come down significantly over the past 5 to 6 years.
And what is the payback period now from the time a person purchases the average solar system, say for your house? How long does it take before it pays for itself with the money you save on your utility bill?
Yeah, that's a great question. The answer is it depends. So now there's so many financing options that are available for solar producers where you don't have to come up with any money up front to install a solar project.
A PACE program.
PACE or lease or PPA. And actually even we have a partnership with the San Diego Metropolitan Credit Union. So the banks are getting involved to finance these systems where property owners don't have to come up with any money up front and they have a monthly payment that's lower than what they're currently paying on electricity. Mm-hmm. So with those financing options, you're saving money from day one with nothing out of pocket. If you were to purchase the system with cash or purchase it outright up front, you're looking at about a 6 to 9 year full return on investment.
Yeah, and that's currently right now with including these incentives that are about to go away.
Correct, including the 30% federal tax credit.
Very good. Well, do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners here today on KNSJ?
I think that just now we're seeing a really great time for people that have ever considered going solar. There's definitely a larger sense of urgency than we've seen in the past with solar becoming not as favorable as current rules and policies provide. So other than that, I thank you for your time and having me in today.
Well, you're very welcome. And certainly we should also add that going solar is a good way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions as well for those that are relying on conventional power or gas or something else, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in San Diego, there's no better place in the entire country to be energy independent where we have sunshine year long.
That's right. You may not need nuclear or gas-powered power plants if everybody would go solar.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm speaking with Timothy Daniels, retired supervisory special agent of U.S. Customs, or ICE,
and author of the new novel, An Ongoing Investigation. My guest, who has a long history of working with narcotic smuggling cases and money laundering, he brings a unique perspective to a border city like San Diego. An Ongoing Investigation is the sequel to his debut novel, A Target-Rich Environment, which was published in 2011. Welcome, Tim. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
And thank you for having me, Raina.
Let's begin with An Ongoing Investigation. I know the story is about a task force trying to stem the flow of narcotics coming into the U.S. from Mexico. Tell us a little bit more about what happens in the book.
Well, first, I would just like to say that I don't think most people that live in this area have any kind of clear understanding of how much narcotics come across the border just on a constant basis.
Right.
And it's thousands of pounds probably a day.
Really?
So as I neared the end of my career, I decided that I would like to try to write a book and, you know, kind of paint a picture of what it was like to work in the war on drugs, which unfortunately we're losing. But, you know, there's just a lot of stories that I accumulated over the course of my career, and I wanted people to understand, number one, the amount of drugs coming across, and then what it was like to be involved in the war on drugs, and, you know, tell some of those stories, explain how difficult it is on family life, and, you know, what it requires of somebody. So in my two books, I basically took a fictitious character, Jimmy Maxwell, and I put him in a fictional case that runs 4 or 5 months. But during the middle of that case, it's interspersed with a lot of little sub-stories of cases that I worked on, you know, where I changed some of the names and details to cover that up. But for the most part, the little sub-stories are true. The overarching story, not so much.
So you got a chance to both tell the small stories of what really goes on and give a message about this is what's happening in San Diego.
Yes. And in the first novel, I went into some of the politics involved, which were very frustrating to most of us that were involved in this kind of work. Not so much in An Ongoing Investigation. I basically made that more focused on Jimmy and his personal relationships and, you know, what it was like to be the target of somebody who was out there trying to get him.
Now, for how many years did you do this work?
About 23.
A wealth of experience.
Yes.
And you're retired now.
I retired at the end of 2009.
Okay. So your protagonist, Jimmy Maxwell, is he you or is he a combination of several people, fully made up?
He's partially me. I mean, I would like to say that I had his work ethic, and I certainly was as busy as he is in the book during the course of my career. I went through some of those same personal struggles that he goes through. But on the other hand, several of my agents that I used to work with have told me that I'm actually more Tom, his supervisor, the grumpy old guy who, you know, is having to approve everybody's reports and, you know, be that buffer between upper management and the guys working on the street. So, yeah, anyway, a little me. I will say that, you know, Jimmy, my main character, is a bourbon drinker, and I'm right there with him.
And you're a bourbon drinker, okay. I know you worked for Operation Alliance, which was the San Diego division of the DEA, and in marine smuggling investigations. And it sounds terrible and exciting and important. Do you miss the excitement? Do you relive your work when you're writing, or...
There's some of that. Operation Alliance is I spent 16 years of my almost 23 there, and that's mostly customs agents or now ICE agents, and then there's 3 or 4 DEA groups, and then there's a half a dozen local cops and a couple of other. I think we had an ATF agent and we had a couple of Border Patrol guys, you know, and it was family. It was like family to me to a large degree.
Could you explain Operation Alliance?
It was a task force of a bunch of different agencies that was formed to work smuggling cases in San Diego, so narcotic smuggling cases. And they respond both to the ports of entry, to seizures made by Customs and Border Protection, the uniformed guys. Also, they did proactive work. Some of it stemmed from follow-ups to port cases. Some was just developed through informants. Some was tips through other law enforcement contacts, San Diego Police Department's narcotics teams. So we worked a kind of a wide variety of drug cases.
And you were a team. So when you work on the book, you're sort of making that team continue, would you say? Is that it?
Well, I'm trying to let the readers know what it was like to be part of the team.
A window.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what you said about the influence of family, how difficult it is on family. In your books, the love interest, Margie Gray, she worries about Jimmy Maxwell's safety and about other things. Now, with the safety of law enforcement in the news so much lately, is there anything you'd like to say about that? Was safety a big stressor on you and your family the way it is for your protagonist?
Not nearly as much, probably, as is portrayed in the book. Certainly, you know, we had our moments. I've been involved in search warrants where there were shootings and different things like that, and I was actually moved out of town for a couple of months with a handful of other agents after some threats came in against us. But for the most part, I didn't really spend a whole lot of time even thinking about that. The tougher part of the work is just being on call all the time. And,
right.
and sometimes you head out in the morning and you think you're coming home at 5, but you may not come home for several days.
Really?
You know?
Okay.
You know, because you just don't know where the case is going to take you. But as for safety, local police have a far riskier job than we did as federal agents.
I see.
Because they're dealing with people that they really don't know. They respond to a radio call or pull somebody over for a traffic ticket, and you don't know if it's some guy on the 10 most wanted list or somebody that just hacked his wife up. Whereas normally we knew who we were targeting, so we took the appropriate amount of people with us to deal with that.
Could you tell us briefly one of the little stories in your book? Could you share with the listeners?
Well, one of the funny little stories involved an older lady who was in her late 70s, a white lady, and she came across the border one Friday night, and there was about 28 or 29 pounds of marijuana in the trunk of her car. and so I was interviewing her, and she just said, look, I went down with some friends of mine who live out here in El Cajon, and I had dinner, and I was getting tired, and they just said, take my car and go home. So I gave her a notice to appear. I tended to believe her. She told me who they were and the registration on the car matched. So on Monday morning, I took another agent friend and a El Cajon police detective, and we went and knocked on the door of this couple. The man who opened the door was wearing a pair of leopard skin bikini briefs. His legs were about 3 inches in diameter, you know, and he had a little belly and almost bald, had probably 3 chest hairs. And then he invites us in, and, you know, we tell him why we're there. And his wife comes out, and she sits in front of us and does the Sharon Stone leg cross thing. And so I decide that, you know, I would like to take a look around the house because he's denying everything. Well, as we are looking around the house, there's a lot of adult-themed things, toys and gadgets. At one point, I went over to a closet and opened the door, and for about a half a second, I see this body falling out on me, and I actually pulled my gun. It startled me for, you know, it was dark, but it turned out it was a blow-up doll.
So,
of course, my partners were all teasing me that you know, if I would have shot it, it would have went zipping around the room like a, you know, balloon that got popped or something.
Okay. So you never know if something's going to be dangerous, serious, or a little bit light.
Or a little humorous.
Yeah, a little humorous. One last question, Tim. Tell us what's next in your sequel. I understand that you're writing sequel. When should we expect to see that?
Well, I haven't really decided whether or not I'm going to do another one. I'm leaning heavily towards it. An ongoing investigation kind of ends just before 9/11, so I'm thinking of trying to write a story that will incorporate a little bit of that into it. But I haven't worked out all the details yet. Both of these other books that I've written took about a year each. If I can get started in the next couple of months, you know, obviously it would be about a year from now before it would come out.
Well, we look forward to seeing it.
Well, I look forward to doing something productive with in my retired years here. So.
And Tim, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
For more information on Timothy Daniels and his work, please visit his publisher's website at sbpra.com/Timothy Daniels. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Leon Thompson with an education report. The San Diego Unified School District's Board of Trustees has voted to sell the former Cleveland Elementary School campus site in San Carlos, where student Brenda Spencer shot and killed the principal and custodian back in 1979, also injuring eight more, including a police officer in America's first school shooting. Spencer, allegedly an abuse victim, later said she committed the crimes because she wanted to die. She remains in prison and won't be eligible for parole hearing until 2019. The school at Lake Atlin Avenue closed years ago, but has more recently been occupied by the Magnolia Science Academy Charter School, serving middle school students. In addition, the San Diego Unified Trustees voted 4-1 to sell the former Benchley Elementary School site on Princess View Drive in Del Cerro. The property is currently leased to Excelsior Academy. The sale is prompted by the district's desire to close its budget gap short-term until Proposition 30 tax increases kick in. 10 News reports. Newly elected trustee Michael McQuarrie cast the only vote against the sales, stating that he believed the district should look for other revenues before selling off school properties. But trustee John Lee Evans has said the alternatives would have required dismantling many programs.
The highest court in the land has sided with one of the tiniest fish in California by refusing to hear an appeal on Monday. The U.S. Supreme Court was asked by some California farming interests and water districts to consider overturning a case that affirms protections for the Delta smelt, a fish found only in the San Francisco Bay Delta. After years of pumping and diverting water from the Bay Delta, water users stepped in to challenge the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service when it made some changes to keep the smelt from extinction. Gary Bobker with the Bay Institute says the steps were small but critical.
And what the courts have basically affirmed is that the steps the government took are scientifically justified. If it hadn't been for those steps, I think there's no doubt that after several years of extreme drought, on top of many years of bad water management, we wouldn't have any smelt at all.
The Supreme Court's refusal to hear the appeal in the case is also being touted as reinforcement of the importance of the Endangered Species Act for allowing the feds to give priority to the survival of a species over economic concerns. Attorney Trent Orr with Earth Justice, who represented the conservation groups in the case, notes that the Delta smelt used to be one of the most common fish in the Bay Delta, but current tallies indicate it's now one of the most rare. However, Orr says the case reaches beyond protecting a single fish species.
It was a very healthy population, and not coincidentally, the populations of a lot of other fish in the Delta have also dropped. So it's sort of an indicator for the health, or unfortunately the lack of ecological health, of the Delta.
With the Supreme Court's refusal to hear the appeal, Orr says the case has gone as far as it can in the legal system, but he predicts it isn't the end of the survival challenges for the Delta smelt. For Public News Service, I'm Chris Thomas.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space,
to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.